We're on.
My name is Merv Hopton. I currently live in a little township called Buxton. I was originally born in Bundaberg and class myself actually as Bundaberg born and bred. Today we're going to talk about Locks 76 down Paddy's on the Burnett River. The person with me is Nina Higgins.
I'm Nina Higgins. I'm a born and bred local and got to know Merv through various avenues. And when this storytelling project came on board, we thought we'd do something about Lot 76. When did you become interested in Lot 76, Merv?
When both my parents had passed away, Nina, we found that we inherited a number of boxes that were virtually uncatalogued. There's photographs, written stories, that style of thing.
How wonderful. You must have been quite excited, nostalgic, sad.
It was a surprise to...
Well, that's wonderful, isn't it? Because so much of our past history has been lost because we don't know anything about the people or we can't find anyone that was around in those times or anyone who knew someone else and so on. So I'm really excited about this because I'm sure there's a lot that I'm going to learn too.
Yes,
You said that your father left a book for the grandchildren.
That is correct.
And it's all in his own hand?
His own handwriting.
Starts from when he was born, which was what year?
1918 in George Street.
In George Street, how lovely. And he talks about his childhood and the different children that he grew up with. Where did he spend his childhood?
His early childhood was... at Paddy's.
Right. It was on Lot 76 then. And so when did your first family have contact with that area? Was it when your father was born or his father?
Well, it's actually going back to my great-great-grandparents when they first came to Australia. They settled in the Tantytha area and
that
around...
That was when they bought in the county of Cook and the parish of Gabarum.
Correct.
And it would have been in the principality, as they describe it, of Tantytha.
Tantytha is the general description.
Yes. Actually, we lost those sort of little terminologies when we separated from Maryborough, which was not until 1881. Sad news, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How about telling me a bit about what that very early map, that 1867 map, showed?
The 1867 map shows just a small area of the river, indicating a little place called Cody Island.
Oh.
I'm not convinced that...
How is it spelled?
C-O-O-D-E.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Was it your two families that were... You described them as being the matriarchs?
Elizabeth Herthwig is undoubtedly the matriarch of those immigrants in the family lines of the Dittman and Herwig family trees.
That's fascinating, isn't it? So they were the ones who purchased that lot?
Yes, Anton Herwig bought Lot 10
yes.
initially, followed by...
Lot 42, Portion 42.
Portion 42 was bought by his son-in-law, John Hort.
Yes.
That they were purchased around the same time. So the family unit was evidently trying to keep together.
Your mum's side of the family and dad's side of the family. Or all of dad's side, but the maternal and paternal sides.
Yes.
When were they naturalised?
Uh, But before they could own land, they had to be naturalised.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. So who was the daughter of Elizabeth's first marriage?
That was Sophie Holzofterhide.
Goodness me.
Who became Christian Dittmann's wife. So she became Sophie Dittmann.
Right, and it's suspected, when did they arrive at Bundaberg?
Well, some people say as early as 1871, but I'm convinced that it's probably more closer to the 1874 period, right, going on some birth and marriage certificates.
Right, and you're quite happy with that, that that's when they arrived. They arrived on what boat?
From England, from Germany, they came on the Shakespeare, arriving in Maryborough in 1871.
Oh, so they were in Maryborough for a short period of time.
Short period, spent a short period in Yangari.
Oh, that's a familiar name around Maryborough also. So you became then very interested in what had happened, why they came to Bundaberg. They would have probably come by ship, I imagine. Or did they come overland?
Indications are they did come here by ship, by a small coastal ship.
Yes. I know that I've read some stories of people coming up the river. Actually, James Charles Burnett came on an unauthorised trip. He sought permission, but it didn't come from the Surveyor General in time. So he was so determined that the river that they were calling the Boyne was not the Boyne, it was the Burnett. And he sailed from the south side. He came in an open boat with his crew from Brisbane. Took him 5 days. You can imagine what that was like, with no cover, and it rained constantly. He arrived in 1874. So, dare say your family came in a similar situation.
There is a report that supposedly they offloaded some furniture, possessions, and a buggy at the cutting at the bridge site.
Oh, yes.
So that means it had to be after 1871 anyway.
It did, didn't it? Mm. Yes. So, when did you find evidence of any births in that family?
When I went through the BDM records.
There were twins born at one stage. That was much later?
Much later, in about 1908, Thelma and May, the twins were born.
Right.
That's the first time you actually see their father as shown as living on Paddy's.
Right. And what about your grandmother, Agnes Hopton, née Dittmann? Where was she born?
She is the first one where you actually see the words Paddy's Creek used.
Right. This is interesting, isn't it? If you'd like to tell us about that map and tell the audience that in 1867 it wasn't anything that looked like an island.
No. The general description in these early periods of that area is a sandbar that goes awash on the high neap tides, a few scrubby trees.
And there seemed to be a deep water hole.
And there was a deep channel, yes, on the west bank.
That's right, which, remember, in 1894 we had a big flood here, and maybe that's when it became joined to the land.
Nina, last night when I was going through some records, it's the 1893 flood. The letters are there in the Lands Department, yeah, where Christian and Sophie had told the Lands Department officer that it was the 1893 flood that filled that channel in with sand.
Isn't that amazing?
It's a big surprise to me.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Because it was quite a deep hole that was there. Right, then that made you look a little bit deeper into the origin of this Lot 76, or alias Paddy's. What did you find then?
Well, there was a lot of inconsistencies coming through. One is the Aboriginals just say that it was always there and claimed it as under a land claim.
Yes.
There was inconsistencies as to the derivation of how Paddy's Island or that area came to be known as Paddy's.
Oh, yes, because some people thought it had something to do with Paterson.
Some people say it was named after Paterson. The Paterson family ultimately did own the island under free title eventually, but that wasn't until around 1915 when the first deed come through. So that tends to discount anything before that period. The interesting thing is in the family too, there was the story that Sophie Dittman used to tell the grandchildren.
And if I remember, you did tell me Sophie was the midwife for a lot of the families.
Her mother, Elizabeth Herwig.
So delivered many, many babies.
Many, many babies down there. There was no access to even the concept of a hospital. You couldn't even get across the Burnett River anyway in those days.
Oh, if you were about to have a baby, you'd hope that she was around.
Yeah, I suspect she might have delivered more babies other than the family.
And you're talking about those farm births and the ones that really didn't get registered?
Yes, particularly when you look at some of the Aboriginal side of things, there is evidence that some of them may not have ever been registered.
That's sad, isn't it?
It is sad.
I was listening last night to a museum in Germany where they have, for the first time in 100 years, brought on view the Aboriginal who died and was taken over there. Where he had something to do with capturing Ned Kelly. And we haven't seen anything or heard anything of it because it's been well preserved and hidden away. But it's on show now, which is just tells you how things get hidden, forgotten. It's like in our cupboards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the naming of the Paddy's area, the story that Sophie used to tell the kids was about this sailing ship that was coming up the river.
Oh, yes.
And there's no wind, so they're in the longboat towing it.
Yes.
And suddenly this gust of wind caught everyone by surprise and pushed the
And was
boat
that
up.
As they came round that bend?
Yeah, round the bend, and it pushed it up onto the sandbar.
Yeah.
And apparently the bosun was an Irishman, and he raced around the boat ranting and raving until finally they got it off.
Well.
And from that, the next day Christian suggested to Sophie that perhaps they should call this area Paddy's.
And well known too, I imagine so. Yes, you started your search then to make all this add up to something. You had to begin a search, and where did you start?
Yeah, so I ended up going down to the Runcorn State Archives. And
fascinating place.
It is a fascinating place, and it's even more fascinating in trying to learn how that place ticks. In fact, one of the girls, librarians, told us in the end that sometimes they learn more from us amateur researchers than they do the professionals.
Well, you've certainly done an excellent job. And tell me, where do you fit into all of this?
Where do I fit into all this? Well, as the family roots go way back into the 1870s. The farm births range from anything from Tantyther, near Tantyther Station.
Or Santyther, I saw too.
It is. Santyther gets a mention. One of them contains Herwig's farm.
Yes.
So we know exactly where that was then, Herwig's farm.
Yes, because we know what portion.
Yeah, that would have been absolute portion 10.
Portion 10, that's correct,
And in those days, because what I was to discover from old title deeds was the property descriptions indicated that the survey was to the riverbank. And when you look at the little map on those surveys, is the Burnett River there. There's no mention of an island or...
No, it looks just like an inlet, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A long, skinny inlet that was reasonably deep in parts.
Yes.
And on the seaward side or the riverside, it was sandy. Very sandy as a result of being washed over at every high tide.
Yes.
Yeah, and almost directly opposite that is where we get the entry of the Saltwater Creek, which drains all the marshes on the southern bank of the river.
Yeah, it's just down a bit further, yeah.
Yes, so you can understand that where we have the meeting of the waters, we have a little bit of depositing of sand, and so it gets built up, and then when there's a flood, then of course it's even worse, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. What also interested me was the fact that you can work out where the old Aboriginal crossing must have been, because there's several documents that refer to only several feet of water at low water that went right across the river.
Yes.
In this particular area, it was more to the bottom of the south end of that big sandbar.
Yes.
In fact, in 1884, there's very strong references to a dredging of that section of the river to make the channel deeper.
Yes. You told me a lovely story about the whalers. Someone jumped ship and they wanted to see if they could get down to the mouth of the Burnett. And it was a couple of whalers had tried but failed. That was in the 1890s, I think. It was quite an interesting story, but all of these sorts of things, there must be lots and lots of stories about the river because it was the lifeblood. Bundaberg is nowhere near as old as what the river is, and I know that in 1895 we had the manager, Mr. Tooth of Colan, not spelt the way we do now, it was spelt C-O-L-A-N-E. He wrote an article in the paper about Bourbon Street, and it leaves me with an absolute curiosity to discover when did Bourbon lose its G.
That's an old age argument. I think it's going to persist for a long time to come. But when I read that article, I read it in a different context.
Yes.
The argument of Bourbon or Bourbon Street didn't interest me. What interested me was further down where it started talking about Beerabong.
B-I-E-R-B-O-N-G. Yes.
And where Mr. Tooth had said that they couldn't get Aboriginals in this area, and there's a reference to 15 to 20 skulls that were found, and they'd left it untouched in that time. But I saw the importance of 15 to 20 skulls because 120 years later, Richard Broome in his book Australian Aboriginals actually uses these figures as a reference point in the number of Aboriginals killed in a dispersal. It's all they could ever manage with the ancient firearms they had in
that period. Because we had a fairly large native police group here.
Yes. Tooth mentions that he found out from the local Aboriginals that the native police were involved with this.
Oh, right, eh? And there lies the tale.
Well, it's never been taken into consideration by any historian at all.
No.
And rather curious as to why the reason is.
Well, maybe we'll leave that as the question unanswered. We've been talking for a long time, Merv, about this magic island in the river that's about 6 miles from the mouth. There must be something that you want to tell us about because you have a very personal attachment to the area.
Yes, Nina, it is personal in the sense that even though we had names and dates and pictures, what we never had was a collection of birth certificates.
Which are the true records, aren't they?
Which are the correct records.
I mean, we know a lot of our older relatives had funny names and they were then given a more English-style name because they were truly German in descent. All of that makes a big difference when you're collecting evidence, doesn't it?
Yes, you see things like Thomas, for instance, could become Tosh and... Charles will be Carl will be changed to Charles, and Heinrich becomes either Henry or Harry. So you've got to have a bit of an insight to who was who in that time.
That's right. Well, how far back have you gone? You've gone to your...
We've gone back into the 1870s, the early 1870s. Joseph Hort was the first child to be born between Anna and John Hort.
And born over there?
Well, it's just described as Bundaberg. That one's a bit difficult in the sense that they may not have gone directly to the area. They might have been, say, in the town area at that stage.
But we didn't have a town area then. I think that they've probably gone to that area and set up camp there. I suppose they came from Maryborough?
Well, they came from Maryborough, but that is another option, yes. It falls in line with the thoughts on the story about they lived on Paddy's Island. The interesting thing is I've yet to turn up any evidence saying they owned Paddy's Island. A lot of people have laid claim to that, but it's not there in the historical records. So you come to the conclusion, well, yeah, they could have been living there, but they're in fact squatting.
Perhaps the first squatters in Bundaberg.
Possible.
Yeah, so that was, who did you say, that was the Herwigs?
The Herwigs and the Dittmans,
yes,
as a family unit.
Right, yeah. And they came from Germany, didn't they?
Yes.
Right, so they're there, and how many children did they have? Was it Elizabeth's second marriage?
It was Elizabeth's second marriage, and from that there's only two children,
yes,
two girls. The third Herwig, the boy, he was actually Sophie's full brother. He was born in Germany and had assumed the name of Herwig when they come over.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? It makes it a bit more confusing. Have you had to get any certificates from overseas?
Only the marriage certificates of Sophie and Christian.
They weren't destroyed in the war?
No, they're apparently still there.
How wonderful. You're very fortunate, aren't you?
That's good if you can read German, though.
Oh. Yes, and then there was one family that had quite a few children.
Yeah, Sophie had a bit of a tribe. I won't try and name them all, but Henry Heinrich, he was actually born in Germany when they come out, just before they come over, so he's only about three when they arrived in Maryborough.
Right.
His other brother that was on the Shakespeare unfortunately died a few months after them arriving. And he's buried in the Rose Garden in Maryborough.
Oh, that's outside the where the old powerhouse used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Then
is it a named plot or just that you know that that's where he's buried?
No, that's where we know he's buried because all that area got changed.
Yes, that used to be a very old cemetery. A long time ago.
Yeah, very old cemetery that got altered.
Yes.
Then Annie Dipman was the first child to be born in Australia to Sophie and Christian, and her birth certificate shows Yangeri.
So that's Maryborough.
That's Maryborough.
Goodness me. So when did they move, do you think, to that area and over at North Bundaberg?
Possibly in the 1874 period.
Oh, right. So they weren't, they were the ones who bought portion 10, according to the first lands map that we had?
The first land map, yeah. That was the Anton Herwig. He purchased that, and then immediately he split that corner lot into four subtitles.
Oh, so we don't know what the size of that lot was.
It's only about 20 acres because under the 1872 sugar coffee deregulation, those river lots were the very first ones to be surveyed, and the actual letter that came out at the time to the government suggested that area be cut up into allotments of ranging from 20 to 30 acres.
Mm. Was that because they thought it wouldn't be fertile enough for sugar or subject to flooding?
She was very fertile ground from the what Christian Dittman had said, and what the fact that they were growing vegetables mainly for supply to the sailing ships when they first came in.
You're very fortunate to know all these things, aren't you? And you've just gleaned it from readings? Research at the archives?
Yeah. We're fortunate in the sense that the father had written down some of the material. I've continued what he could never access.
Well, that's wonderful. And I hope that your offspring really appreciate what you're doing when they get to be your age. Because unfortunately in life, it's as we get older, we look to see where we've come from. And
That is true. As they say, you should have started this when you were 20.
But you wouldn't have.
You would never have thought of it, doing it. Now, just if I might mention, going back to the origins of Paddy's, or what became known as Paddy's Island, in 1890... that's the first time you'll actually find that mentioned in a government gazette. Actually used officially.
Yes.
Right.
So, but we don't know when it was officially named that, do we?
No, I can't locate that except for where it's on birth certificates, where Paddy's is mentioned, which is only a year or two before.
You had a look at one school admission for one of your relatives and found Paddy's Island there.
Oh, school admissions are very interesting because the various names that I was aware of, they range from Tantitha Scrub to Tantitha to On the Riverbank. And it's not until you get to about 1907 you actually find a school admission where it states Paddy's Island. But because I know the name, I believe they were actually living on Waterview Road, which brings out the idea of Paddy's Island was being used in two different ways. One was the island itself. The other is a very distinct area separating, say, Tantitha Ferrymead from the Waterview area.
Oh, yes, that'd be true too. Yes, because Ferrymead was purchased roughly in that period? The
little before Nugent Wade Brown, I believe, would have been in that area.
He was there in about the 1877, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that when did the Young Brothers come out?
Oh, much later.
It's in the 1880s or something, I imagine, that they came out.
Yeah.
Sometime. So Ferrymead was established then by the two young boys that came out, yes.
Yeah, there's a...
So Ferrymead wasn't named Ferrymead until they got there. They named it after the fact that as they saw the lagoon, the mist would rise.
The mist and the fairies.
Looked like the fairies that they saw in England.
Mm.
Yes. Now, it's really quite interesting when you go back and take the time, and it does take a lot of time, doesn't it, Merv?
Well, the problem in finding things I found in the state archives is there's so much there, it's... trying to locate the very start of what you're looking for, because it could be
volumes and volumes,
volumes
away.
But it could be hidden anywhere, and you don't know whether it's going to be on microfilm or still existing in a brown paper bag. Most of the files I have located are actually in brown paper bags.
Oh, truly?
Yes.
In the archives?
Yes, and these are the ones, for instance, the 1890 temporary recreation reserve of Paddy's Island. The maps and those letters that I located
were all there.
Were all there in an envelope, wrapped up in a brown paper parcel.
That must have been considered a good way to preserve things. Well, you've certainly preserved things well so far, Merv, and I'd like to think that you keep going and find out more, because I'm at present researching James Charles Burnett, who actually had the river named after him, only when his letter got back to the Surveyor General to say that he had established forever and a day it was not the Boyne River, but it was another river that emptied into Harvey's Bay, as it was referred to then. And the Surveyor General, when he read the letter, immediately sent back information to say he had the honour to name the river Burnett after him.
Hmm. Yeah. Nina, one of the interesting things that comes out of this is I come across the Mirrabarra Harbour Master's report, who had actually also sailed up the river to check the suitability for navigation. And... I think from memory it's dated about 1862, this report.
It's just prior to when Burnett came up.
Yeah. Now, it does not mention anything about an island area.
It would tell you about Harriet Island.
It talks about islands further up.
Yes, Harriet Island.
And all the rest. These old fellas were pretty damned astute. And if there was an island there, they would have...
noticed it.
They would have noticed it.
I'm quite sure. Yes. So the mystery stays, but we know in the Burnett River, which is on the east coast and on which Bundaberg, the main town, is built, it certainly is there. The Burnett River is one of the beautiful rivers up the coast. Unfortunately now, we sort of have many dams upon it, 24 dams on the Burnett River and tributaries. And, of course, that means that it will stay forever. But I believe after the floods at the beginning of this year, 2011, the fishing has improved out of sight. So floods do some good sometimes.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I remember stories... The grandfather used to tell about the schools of mullet. You stand on the traffic bridge.
Oh, yes.
And for a couple of weeks, the river would be black with mullet going up. You don't see that these days.
Certainly don't. But I do know the story, and although I didn't witness it, but the burning of the rum distillery and the rum all spilt out into the river, and we had lots of dead fish floating. The people grabbed the opportunity to go and get bags upon bags of fish and salt them down. And that was 1932-33.
So people might be surprised at the size of one of the barramundi that's...
are over near that island, yes.
Yeah, yeah. One thing about those sand flats, too, down at Paddy's, was that was always a good kingfishing area.
Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
There you are. You're giving away lots of secrets about the river.
They're the old tales that I know from when I was a youngster.
Good.
There is a picture existing where the one salmon that was caught down that way, the man took it home on a push bike, and his whiskers were hanging over the front wheel and his tail were over the back wheel. That's how big he was.
Ooh.
Yeah, huge fish.
It's either a little bike or a huge fish, isn't it? Excellent. No. Keep going. Yeah. What else do you want to talk about there?
Well, just recently I was down talking to Joe Sheehan, who's the current owner of Lot 10.
Oh, yes.
And he informed me of a little bit of a problem that might arise involving number 76.
Oh, yes.
And Joe, for a starter, couldn't understand how Lot 10 was split into four subtitles.
Yes.
I gave him the answer to that one.
Well, it was your family that did
it. It was my family that did it.
That's right.
But when he started talking about 76 and the survey points, because he had to have it resurveyed just recently to resolve one or two issues down there, yeah. And he couldn't understand was all the fixed points go everywhere, and it's a long, slender piece of land.
Oh.
And but I'd already found the answer to that.
And what was that?
In the 1906 file, when Patterson, William Patterson in particular, was trying to obtain a special lease,
yes,
on the south end of the island,
yes,
and the Lands Department wanted to... dispose of two parts, that Patterson put the idea forward that if it was to go to an uncontested auction, he'd be prepared to bid on the island side and this newly surveyed sanded in river channel. So we actually know the origins of that number 76.
Yes.
That's right. The river spawned it, so as to speak.
It has, hasn't it? Mm. Through the floods and
through
the
floods.
Yes.
So.
So Paddy's Island is, even though it's a recent, in as far as time goes, it's a very recent formation. It's got lots of history, hasn't it?
There's a lot of history in the area. It goes back way into the early days of Bundaberg, which is really hasn't been acknowledged by any historian.
No, that's right. We seem to have always been left out. No one wanted to know about us. But we're there, mm-hmm, rest assured, and I hope that through your efforts and maybe some of mine, we'll get somewhere and we'll get some truth about the early days in Bundaberg.
Well, some of these records, I do agree, have to be...
censored.
Altered, corrected.
Corrected, that would be a bit.
Right. In reading both Rackerman's books and the Book of Nolan,
yes,
you come to realise there's very serious inadequacies in both of them.
Exactly, yes. We really don't know much about how it felt to live in those times. It's very. Mm. Some of it is very factual, but it lacks the human bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was fascinated that down there, you talk about a wedding, for instance. A wedding might have been held in the church in Bundaberg itself, but what happened afterwards? they'd all go back to the big barn out at Lot 10.
That's right. Lots of weddings were held out there.
Yeah, and they'd had the big mango trees there. But how long did you think a party went for, a wedding party in those days?
I'm not sure.
A week.
Oh, goodness me.
The bride and groom spent the first night there.
Yes.
They left the following morning. And
where on earth could they go in those days? Not far.
But really, you got to think of it in terms of why did these parties go for a week? It turns out they were a huge social event. Because of the isolation, it was a chance for everyone in the area to have a get-together.
Exactly right, yes.
In fact, I was told a story about my grandmother when she married Herbert, her husband. Apparently the great-grandmother was the one that prepared the wine. Now, I assume that being German, it was probably a mulled wine.
I was going to say that, yes.
Yeah, that bit was left out. But apparently the old man, the fellas would all have a drink and a feed and then go to sleep and then wake up and have another sleep and another feed and a sleep. And apparently that's the way it was for about a week.
And what about accommodation? Just in tents?
In tent, the big barn, the big barn that was there.
Oh, yes, because they always had palliasses to sleep on, didn't they? There were always plenty of those.
There's always something to sleep on.
It's very interesting. This is the end of our story, and I hope that it has many more to come.
I think I've got a lot more to find out still about this area.